2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is Dylan White. You got 2 weeks remaining as the reigning NFBC main event champion, Dylan. That means that I only have this show and probably the next one that I can actually make that statement. Unless you think you're gonna pull off the main event title again this year.
No, I find it very, very difficult to believe that'll happen. But I am behind the scenes helping some guys who are in the hunt for some overall money, trying to give them tips on
awesome.
On how to target certain categories and all that. But
any big names that are in the hunt right now? I haven't looked at the leaderboards recently.
So there's this guy, Jason Senteu, who's has the top and the third highest teams in the main. So that's like $230,000 or something like that. Steve Weimer, perennial incredible player, is just crushing the DC overall, the distance between him and second. And second is Dustin McComas. Shout out to him.
He's greater. Also another good baseball guy.
Yes,
great
very
podcast.
Good.
I listened to him and James.
Yeah.
Did a show together as I was making the final stretch home from Ohio. I think I was right on the New York Mass border, and I popped that one in and sort of took me home as I was munching on some Popeyes on the road and cruising down the Mass Pike, listening to the two of them. And he had a lot of interesting insights, and, you know, obviously a guy that works the real baseball side pretty heavily as well. So that's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. He's good. He I think he finished first or second in the Earth League last year, and he was a guest on that pod talking about it. Good podcast guest. So he's second in the DC overall, and the distance between him and first, him and Weimer, is greater than like the distance between second and 10th. Like Weimer's just crushing it. And I look at his team, and it's just like, there's no holes.
I have like my best DC team ever. I'm in second in the league. I'm not going to get first, I don't think, unless I would have to have like the most absurd run over the final 2 weeks. And I don't think taking Ryan O'Hearn out of my lineup and adding Alec Baum back in is going to make that much of a difference, but I suppose you never know. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I'm in like 600th. Like, this is a good team to me, and I'm like in 600th. Like, that's, it's not a great reflection on the show. Thank God that you win some stuff, because I certainly am out. I'm in the back nine, it seems, in fantasy right now, Dylan.
No, it's funny. Our team, our DC that's in second now, but clinging to second, it seemed safe, but now it seems we may fall to third. Like, our first three picks were Acuna, Tyler Glasnow, and Yamamoto. So we were in the wilderness for a while, but we're still like, we're 100th overall with that. We were as low as 50 at one point. But that one, it's been a tough year, but the super I'm doing with Jordan and Brian is in sixth and actually within reach of third. So that's doable. And that's a nice chunk of money. That'll turn me a profit this year, 'cause right now it doesn't look like I'm going to make money this year. It's tight in my home league, which is kind of just for pride. It's got like a couple of high school friends in it. All that one started. So of course, that's the one I'm paying the most attention to, because you need bragging rights, of course.
Yeah. See, what you need is to not make a huge investment in leagues up front. So if you win one league or come in second in a DC, like I might, I'm going to probably be slightly in the black, because I had 150 in credits left over from 2 years ago when I came in third in a DC. So I just rolled that over and did that one. So it's kind of free money, right? 50 for the RAS 30, and I think like 150 for my home league. And I guess if I come in second, I'll probably clear that. Like, I don't have a ton of pay leagues, you know. For whatever reason, I have not engaged in as many this year as I have in the past. And like, I guess Earth is technically a pay league, and I've been trash in that. I'm climbing up the charts now to 10th. Now that Corbin Carroll was in an absolute puddle, that's helped me not be the second or third worst team in the league like I was for a good chunk of the season. And the funny thing is, that's a team that when I came out of the draft and I still look at like the personnel on the team, it looks really good. The problem is I was way overexposed to Mike Trout, like all over the place this year. I took the discount. It was like, it's Mike Trout. Come on. And like, when are you going to get this price tag? You know, if he plays 130, I'm great. And that just never happens. So I'm going to blame Mike Trout, but it's probably my own fault. But we're 5 minutes into the show. I don't think we need to talk about our teams any longer. You know, yeah. Probably got people tuning out. They're like, Jeff, Dylan, we don't care. We don't care. We have our own problems, our own teams to worry about. What's your issue? Any big news that has dropped over the last week that you feel as if is valuable to discuss? Because I think there's a couple of things like promotion, stuff like that, that will come up with some players a little bit later in the show. But anything that like top of mind, anything you wanted to bring up before we jump into this, we're going to be talking a little bit of Dylan's RoboScout top 120 dynasty rankings, as well as my annual favorite article that I write, which is the minor league hitters with traits to target fantasy for the next year. We've had some massive hits over the last couple of years of guys that were extremely relevant in all forms of fantasy, frankly. So, but anything else you wanted to bring up before we jump into your RoboScout top 120, Dylan?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Caden Dana, I don't know if you saw that. That just came in before this podcast. Today is Monday evening. No. He got sent down back to AA. So that's a bit of interesting news. I don't know if that's going to make or break any leagues, but it is interesting.
Yeah. Kind of interesting how that that works out with Dana. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was he's very young. I think it was the youngest pitcher in the major leagues this year. You know, there's some good traits there. I think the pitchability is really high. The stuff is okay, not unbelievable. I think we kind of saw that with the major league stuff grades, et cetera. He was never a guy that really popped like in our model. I think it's just more a sum of his parts type. There's enough velocity for it to play. But, you know, probably more of a back-end fantasy name. But the thing is with these guys in fantasy, a guy that's that young, that does have pitchability, that does have some power to his arsenal, there's some tweaks and things that he can make and, you know, potentially take a step forward that I think once the – and we talked about this in an earlier episode. Once these guys are up to the major leagues, there's so much value in rostering them and keeping them because that's often where the breakouts come from. It's not coming from the prospect jumping up to the major leagues. It's that prospect that's already debuted. There's a little, you know, shine off of him, so to speak. And I think more often than not, that shine that comes off is more imagined than it is real. It's because, you know, we don't see Paul Skeens that often. We don't see that many pitchers who come up to the major leagues and just never struggle. It just doesn't happen. So I think Dana will be back. He's probably part of that rotation breaking camp next year, unless something goes wrong, an injury, whatever could potentially go awry. We always know with pitchers that there's a high probability that something could go wrong. But that being said, why don't we jump into this list? We have a new number one on our Baseball America Top 100. He's number three on yours. Talk me through the top 10 here, because I think this is an interesting group of prospects, all very fantasy relevant. Probably players that are universally rostered in even the shallowest of dynasty leagues. So who is your number one prospect, Dylan, and why?
Yeah. So in the preamble to the article, I talked about how, like, you know, every week subscribers know I write, I like a top 25 hitters and pitchers at each level. And then I talk about who's, you know, who had some good movement in that ranking and then who's been doing some interesting things and may not have been on that ranking. And I have it separated kind of on purpose, because you can kind of get granular at each level. And I think depending on your dynasty league and your team, you may want to know, like, maybe guys in the minor, like the lower minors, are not important to you at all because, you know, you're in a shallow league or you don't have that many minor leaguers. So you don't really care if you have some DSL guys peppered into this list. You want to know who's good at AAA, who's good at AA, like who's on the verge of coming up. And so that was by design, just because I feel you can get kind of better analysis that way. But then I have these monthly updates where I kind of just aggregate everything together into one. I try to account for, you know, peak projection, proximity to the majors. I try to kind of work out the philosophy of, like, do you want, if two guys have the same peak projection of, say, 300 hitter with 30 home runs, and one is 18 in low A and one guy is 24 in triple A, who is more valuable? Because the guy in triple A is going to be up sooner, but he won't hit his peak until later. And meanwhile, the younger guy will probably have be in the majors earlier than 24, blah, 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 blah. So it's trying to figure out a nice balance of of what's more valuable, what's not. I'm trying to account for pitchers, how their fantasy value is in there, their volatility, etc. Anyway, long story short, it kind of spits out agnostically, as in no human intervention from me, except like what the formula is.
Sure.
Who the top 120, 200 is. So all that being said, number one is Leo DeVries from the Padres, where RoboScout has given him a projection of basically 30 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 270 average, 350 OBP, 17 years old, his age 17 season in low A. So all that with the StatCast folded in, he ends up being the number one projected player. Emmanuel Rodriguez, who's now in AAA, huge OBP. Oh, that's another thing, trying to balance batting average and OBP. So I weight kind of WRC plus heavily because it kind of accounts for both. Emmanuel Rodriguez ends up at number two. And then number three, like you already talked about at the beginning, Roman Anthony. He's projected for a 120 WRC plus, 26 home runs, 12 stolen bases. There's a reason he's the number one BA prospect, and he's number three on this fantasy list. So, I mean, if you had to choose, I would kind of lean toward the BA list rather than this, because this is just RoboScout. No scouting, no anything, just numbers being spat out based on.
But I think for fantasy, this is super relevant, right? Like, you know, we take a lot of other things into consideration in our list, so it's not like for like. But, you know, I do like all these names that are in the top 10. You know, I think the most exciting ranking is number four. Michael Arroyo being there just kind of puts into perspective the type of year that he's had. For you in fantasy, has Arroyo surpassed Emerson? Has he surpassed Montas? Because I think those are both guys that came into the season obviously ranked higher than Arroyo universally, probably still are most places. In fantasy lists, at least. I think for a real life list, there's maybe, you know, a little bit more with Emerson in terms of defensive value and things like that. But for you in fantasy, like, do you prefer Arroyo, like, right now in comparison to Montas and Emerson?
I have Arroyo ahead of Montas, yeah. In terms of value compared to perceived value, I think Arroyo head and shoulders above them. But maybe, you know, I know on some industry lists, he's creeping into the top 100, top 50, Michael Arroyo is. But at the beginning of the season, earlier in the season, Colt Emerson was like top 25. Lázaro Montes is top 25. I think they've kind of softened a bit. Emerson has a high ground ball rate. Montes has struggled a bit since he got to high A. He's kind of picking it up a bit now. You mentioned Arroyo's defense. He's actually grading out pretty well on run prevention. I mean, he is at second, but he's doing quite well. So in terms of like who I would trade for, it would probably be Arroyo of those three, because he's probably going to be the cheapest. You won't have to give up as much. Just doesn't have as much kind of track record pedigree. But they're all pretty close. Like I wouldn't be upset if I got stuck with Arroyo instead of Emerson or even Montes. Like, I'm worried about Montes becoming like a DH only at some point or first base. I mean, it's a long way before that happens, I think. But like, I think Arroyo, even though he's a bit shorter and maybe not the most, like, doesn't have like the lean body that you kind of want from a middle infielder, I think he's gonna have a pretty good career, I think. So yes, long story short, I do kind of like Arroyo better than Emerson and Montes a bit.
Emerson's seven on this list. So like, it is a pick 'em there, more or less. I mean, they're very, very close. Another name here that I find to be super exciting that you have at number eight, Bryce Eldridge, who just got the promotion up to AAA, was at only in AA for a very short period of time. He's obviously going to get a little tail on the end of his season here in AAA. We'll see. I mean, I think he's, you know, potentially a candidate to go to the Arizona Fall League as well. So it wouldn't shock me. Maybe we could see him there, which could be exciting. I'll be there the first week of the season. So that's another name that I think is really trending upward over the second half of the season as he's really started to rock the boat. Regardless of what RoboScout says, how do you view Bryce Eldridge right now in terms of the fantasy landscape? Where is he ranking out if you're doing the Dylan-based top 100?
I mean, he might be top 10, saying off the top of my head. I think he's got to be top 10. He's 19 in his age 19 season in AAA, like you said. He's just crushing all these levels now. Like, I think at the beginning of the season, he was struggling a bit in contact. I think I texted you back in like April or May saying like he had a 50% contact rate. And it was like, uh-oh, like the power is still there, but the swing and miss is happening. What's going to happen here? And then now the contact rate's quite good. It's, well, it's not quite good, but it's, you know, pushing average. And he's so young and playing at upper levels. And the fact that it's average now after starting off so low means he, you know, he's been above average sort of in the second half. So, I mean, he's got 30 plus home run power, easy, very athletic. Because he's cutting the strikeout rate down, it's like he's creeping up. Like here I have him having a peak batting average of 270, which is kind of unheard of what, you know, you would have thought at the beginning of the year. You'd think like kind of 240, 250, you know, 30 home runs seems reasonable, but, you know, he's got to kind of cut down on the strikeouts. And because he's a two-way player, maybe, you know, he doesn't have that hitting track record, maybe like where he's just focusing on hitting. So it's going to be raw. So you're kind of in for the long haul, but now it's just sort of like the leaps and bounds he's made. I think it's not out of the realm of possibility to have him top five, top 10 in a fantasy list, even though he's first base.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I love Bryce Eldridge. I had him as a breakout for the season. Him as one of my fantasy names to target last year. Surprise, surprise, he made the list again this year. Quality of contact is so good. You know, there is some swing and miss, but I think that he's sort of at a point where it's sort of teetering on that edge of being right in that nice realm of contact skills where there's really not necessarily a whole lot more production he's going to get from making more contact. I think slight gains in that area, continues to improve the plate discipline, which is already pretty good. He's a guy that for sure could be an impact fantasy player in a very short period of time, left-handed bat in that park as well. So, you know, that certainly makes me feel a little bit better. He could be a guy that puts together some splash hits. I know that's all the rage right now with Elio Ramos being the first right-handed batter to hit a splash home run there in San Francisco. So I think the other thing, and he had said this to me when we had talked a little bit at the Futures game when he was at the prospect pad, was, you know, hey, this is a guy who is a talented two-way player, really good athlete. I think a lot of evaluators looked at Eldridge and said this guy could play right field without a problem, especially if, you know, he puts in the work and refines himself out there. A guy that was a really talented pitcher that I think would be a really legitimate prospect as a pitcher as well. He kind of said himself that he faced a lot of guys in low A that he felt he was a better pitcher than at this moment. But he was happy to be at first base simply because, you know, Eldridge is a guy that isn't blocked whatsoever in that organization. You know, he's gonna end up probably their starting first baseman in a short period of time because there's really no one in front of him to stop him from getting playing time there. So I thought that was kind of an interesting angle on all this as well.
100%. 100%. I am extremely pleased with the progress he's made. Like 3 weeks ago, if you said, is he a top 50? I'd be like, yeah, I could see it, but you know, he's not really putting it up yet. But then like, he's just been crushing it in the last month. So I'm totally on board.
Yeah. It's been great stuff to see. Big Bryce Eldridge fan. Let's move a little bit further down this list. I'm sort of interested here for a name that popped for you that you fear is maybe underrated in fantasy circles that could have some impact next year. I see a couple of names in this list that pop to me immediately, but is there anyone for you that sort of comes to mind when I say, hey, somebody who's a little bit underrated who could have some impact in their major leagues next season?
Yeah, I think if you go down the list, like a name that kind of sticks out as surprising to me is number 25, Logan Henderson, the Brewers. Not really heralded as a pitching prospect, like widely, definitely not in the top 10, but just his strikeout to walk ratio at AA, like he projects to have a peak projection of like a 115 whip with a 378 ERA. Again, this does consider stuff plus, but it doesn't consider sort of like the pitch mix itself. So if you dig in a bit deeper, you see he's kind of primarily fastball changeup. So I immediately kind of get a bit wary that it's a changeup heavy profile, kind of like Marco Estrada, or we saw with Trevor Richards, who, you know, can make hitters look ridiculous, but then when he gets traded at the trade deadline, he can't get anybody out. So relying on that deception and making sure you have the repeatable mechanics, repeatable kind of like similar arm speed, etc., all that deception, it's a bit, maybe it's anecdotal, but it's a bit scary to me. So you may ding him, you may not take this at face value and say he's the 25th best fantasy prospect in the league, but definitely had me take notice. And I looked in my leagues to see if I could get him for free. Going down the list as well, Jonathan Rodriguez of the Guardians, who had a brief cup of coffee in the majors this year. He's young. He's still 24. He's in AAA. He's projected for big power. That's a surprising one. So, you know, again, he didn't really crush it in his debut, and Gianquenzi Noel is now up and kind of doing well and taking his spot on the depth chart. But that's an interesting one for sort of underrated names of who still projects to be good. And, you know, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's not next year, but if you have 30 home run juice in the tank and you're still in your early 20s, you're going to probably have some major league value down the road.
Yeah, 100%. Another name that kind of jumped out to me is Chase Meidroth, man. Chase Meidroth is one. The other one was Jonathan Rodriguez, who you have here at 36. Rodriguez really isn't my cup of tea, but I do think is an interesting prospect in fantasy that you could probably get fairly cheap at this point. Has some production in AAA, could be up in the majors next year. And I think it's the same with Meidroth. There's just so few guys that get on base at the level that Meidroth does. If you're in an OBP league, I think that this guy is very valuable, maybe a little bit underrated in that sense. Just shout out to Scout the Stat Line. They've been beating the Meidroth drum for a long time. I have no idea what his position is still. It's probably second base. Yeah. Is he going to push Christian Campbell off of second base? No. Christian Campbell is arguably one of the best prospects. If not, I think you can argue he's the best prospect in baseball. I like Anthony more, but I think it is fairly close. You know, you're talking about two sort of superstar talents that have put up great production this year together. Anthony, obviously a little bit younger, hits the ball a little bit harder. There's kind of equal on the plate skills. Campbell maybe runs a little bit better. Anthony has more of a short shot position in terms of where he's going to play. So I think, you know, there's some give or take there. I think, good friend Michael Halpern of, you know, Imaginary Brick Wall actually has Christian Campbell at one. I kind of asked him, cause he was a big Yankees fan. I think now he's been doing this a little bit more. He's become more agnostic. So I texted him and I said, how much did it kill you to have two Red Sox 1-2 in your rankings? but I think that's the point that we're at. It's a really interesting Red Sox system. They have a ton of really interesting prospects. And now it's like, where does Meidroth fit in? Because he'd spent an entire season in AAA and has, you know, a well above 400 OBP going into the series last week. I think it was over 450 or 440. Like, it was pretty close to, you know, about as close as you could get to a 500 OBP without having one. But, you know, I think it dropped down a little bit last week. I think it's maybe in like the 420 range now, 430. You know, Meidroth is a guy that I think, depending upon the format, he's really interesting. Go check this list out. It's the top 120. You know, I think you had a great qualifier ahead of it saying, you know, like Jesus Mate isn't on this list, but, you know, certainly isn't somebody you should move maybe for anyone on this list. But some of that is just like DSL bias and some of those things. But on the same time, you brought up like Gerard Encarnacion, who's a guy who's seeing regular playing time in the majors now. I think models are really good for players like that, that maybe are a little bit underrated. And as you get into deeper dynasty leagues, finding those kind of guys that can hit and provide some depth, some value, is the name of the game.
Yeah. I mean, I've had quite, not to pat myself on the back, but I've had quite good success this year of calling, like when call-ups are going to happen. Like, I mentioned Sean Burke and he gets called up. I mentioned like Shea Whitcomb gets called up. I mentioned Isaac Collins, Daniel Schneeman, all these guys, just because they're performing really well in the upper levels, that they're kind of forcing the issue. So Gerard Encarnacion, like you said, is just another one like that. Like he had a brief cup of coffee, I think, too, with the Marlins, because I had him on a dynasty team at one point. But he just continues to mash, and it just seemed like a matter of time before he's up with the Giants, and he is, and he's got a full-time designated hitter job right now.
And there you go. Not too bad. All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about my article with some of the minor league hitters with traits to target in fantasy in 2025. We'll be right back after this message.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed, because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
All right, and we're back. Dylan, we just talked RoboScout top 120. Dynasty Prospects. If you have not checked that out, it came out on Sunday. Go over to the site, check it out. I think it's definitely valuable. Probably a good sort of, almost post-mortem tool to look at this point as your dynasty seasons are wearing down and kind of looking at what players you maybe want to target in trades or, you know, maybe some potential late season waiver wire ads if your league is shallow enough and you see somebody that's ranked really highly. And you can go and cross-check that against all the different content that we have both in the fantasy and the real-life baseball side that can inform your opinions even more. But here, let's get into it. So I've been doing this article for 3 years now. The first edition had guys like Gunnar Henderson, Corbin Carroll, Jordan Westberg, Junior Caminero made the last 2 years before he graduated. Spencer Steer was a big win from the first year's article. James Wood and Josh Young, also players that were featured. Wood was featured in last year's pretty heavily. You kind of go back and look at some of these different names, you know, Wyatt Langford, of course, Colt Keith, who's had a pretty good second half. This is the beginning of my Roman Anthony hype train as well. There are a lot of redundant names this year, you know, a lot of guys who kind of snuck back into the list. Some others who maybe aren't on the list anymore, like an Xavier Isaac, as some of the contact skills have backed up. But he was a guy that was on last year's list. Zach DiZenzo is a guy that debuted this year who made the list last year. Moises Ballesteros was on it for a couple of years. At this point, I figured it was old hat. So tried to bring in some new blood. The first name I talked about was Roman Anthony. I've talked so much and written so much about Roman Anthony in the last month. It's pretty clear how I feel about Anthony. I think this guy's a potential future all-star. He just beautifully pairs big power plus 70 grade or better power and EVs with, you know, low in zone miss rates and good swing decisions, and has produced an excellent line at just 20 years old and reached AAA, and it hasn't slowed down whatsoever. I mentioned Christian Campbell as well, another guy we talked about at the top of the show, who's been one of the best hitters in the minor leagues. He's been the best hitter in the minor leagues this year. I don't think I'm saying anything out of turn there by bringing that up. But there are some other names here that I wanted to sort of bring up that I think maybe are highly touted, but don't necessarily get as much press. Dalton Rushing is putting together an absolutely unbelievable database season. 426 x WOBAcon. If you don't know what that is, it's expected WOBA on contact. So it is a metric that measures purely quality of contact. It's looking at EVs. It's looking at batted ball angles as well, and bucketing all those different balls, and kind of seeing like what would the production be on each time that this person makes contact. You know, really good 90th percentiles, really low in zone miss rate of 16.5%. He rarely ever chases 18.8%. And he's somebody that elevates consistently. 62% fly ball plus line drive. That puts him in the top 6th percentile of minor league hitters in terms of getting the ball in the air. And he has all those other numbers in terms of contact and approach and just raw power that really backs it. The biggest question for Rushing is, where is Rushing going to end up playing defensively? I think regardless of what the answer to that question is, this is a guy who's bad is just so good. It's going to get into lineup. I think he's major league ready. I don't know if he's major league ready with the Dodgers next year, if he ends up somewhere else. You know, it's the Dodgers. They're always making moves. Obviously, they have a great catching situation with Will Smith, but I do think there's a way for Rushing, as he's seen some more time in different positions throughout the diamond outfield, you know, played some first base in his career, that he's maybe carving out sort of a super utility bat first role and could be really, really interesting. What are your thoughts on Rushing for next year? Because I do think he's somebody that I'm pretty bullish on.
I love him. I love him for next year. I'm hoping he does not get called up this year so that he retains catcher eligibility, because that's going to be a very strategic player to be taking in like NFBC leagues. If he has catcher eligibility, where do you take him? Is it like a Dalton Varsho type of thing, or maybe Carl Schwarber back in the day, where you have a guy who will get full-time plate appearances and have catcher eligibility, just be a monster fantasy player. So that's kind of what I'm hoping. I'm hoping he doesn't get called up and play in the outfield and lose that catcher eligibility. yeah, the quality of contact is just so good. Like you said, the swing decisions are so good. The contact rate is above average. Like, it's just, there's really no holes in his game against all kind of pitch types as well.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go through every name on this list. We've talked about a couple of them already. You can go and check out the article. There are a few I want to call out. Jesus Mate, mentioned him earlier. I made the statement in the first sentence of my blurb in this article that I think he has the makings of a future number one overall prospect. I am not talking out my butt when I say that. We heard great scout feedback. The data itself really backs it. When you see somebody with these skills, with power, with all the underlying traits that you look for, and they're at such an extreme level for his age versus all the other competition, I think that that screams that this guy is special. I had made this call back in 2021 with Junior Cameron Arrow, but when he was still a Cleveland Guardian prospect, actually. And I'm making it again with Mate. I think you look at what he did this year, hit 331, 458, 554 with 6 home runs and 28 stolen bases across 51 DSL games. He's just 17. He turned 17 like a month, 3 weeks before the DSL season started. So he's a super young 17 for that league as well. Was the most outstanding player in the league. But I think when you look under the hood, that's what, to me, separates him from other players. 104.2 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity for a 17-year-old is absurd. That is a plus metric easily. You know, I don't know if he's not going to grow into 108 EV, 90 EVs. Maybe he does. But I think you can at least project that there's going to be a baseline of plus power to above average power. But he does that with some of the most absurd end zone miss rate numbers and chase numbers you probably will see. A 9.6% end zone miss rate this season, a 14.9% chase rate. Those are absurd hit tool numbers. I would be excited about this guy even if his EVs were like 90th percentile EVs were like 99 miles per hour. Because like, all right, like he'll grow into a little bit more power, but this is a great hit tool. When I see that power plus those underlying skills, plus the fact that he does put the ball in the air enough, I think the angles could continue to get better, but he's got enough contact and approach to sort of sacrifice some of that contact, as silly as that sounds. He can give some of that up and still like keep, or actually see a tick up in production because he just gets a little bit more aggressive, is hitting the ball at better angles. He's really exciting. Do you think I'm out over my skis saying that I think that Mate could be a future number one prospect? I think there were some people in the Twitterverse that reacted to it in the fantasy space that were like, well, blah, blah. And I think it's just people that don't have access to data, don't have access to DSL video, aren't necessarily talking to scouts. And that's where we make our bones. I mean, that's why we do the work, and it's why we sent Josh down to the Dominican Republic. You know, why we talk to contacts and scouts and front office folks and analysts to get these sort of insights. But I'm not going crazy here. The Mate data is absurd.
Yeah. If you take the DSL hitters and you plot contact on the x-axis and like 90th percentile exit velocity on the y-axis, you know, you get a cloud of players. And then there's this satellite that is in the top right corner who is separated from the rest of the cloud, and that's Jesus Mate. So that alone puts him in like, you know, the Aaron Judge or the Mike Trout and the Juan Soto kind of area. But then you add in he has a shortstop's build, he stole 28 bases, very athletic, he doesn't chase, like it's not just contact and thump, it's the swing decisions as well. Like definitely has all the tools to be a top 10 fantasy prospect, like you said. I have him in my two fantasy leagues, our dynasty leagues. I'm very, very happy about that. I've had him for a long time, obviously, because the DSL is my favorite hunting ground, the complex leagues with RoboScout. So I love that call. I didn't have the guts to say what you said, but I think it's definitely valid.
I'm nothing if I'm not gutsy, Dylan. I try to remain gutsy. Here's another prospect I wanted to ask you about. Zaire Hope. I know he missed 2.5 months in 2024. He's another guy that I view him as a top 50 or better prospect. Underlying data is absurd. his EVs are plus. A 108.5 mile per hour, 90th percentile, puts him in the 99th percentile of all minor leaguers. That is an absurd number. And he does that with a 13.1% miss rate, a 16.6% chase rate. I think, like, data-wise, he's like the heir apparent to Roman Anthony. It's just very similar skill sets.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. Last year, he had a contact rate of 66%, which was below average. And now it's 76%, which is better than average. Last year, he had a 90th percentile exit velocity of 104. This year, it's 108.5. So, like, he's making gains in all the right areas. I don't know if the Dodgers unlocked something after that trade, or they just kind of told him to focus on the thing he's good at. But he's definitely taking a huge step forward. Like, 108.5, 90th for a 19-year-old is outrageous. That's Jonathan Rodriguez territory.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so absurd. And he does it with the plate skills. I mean, I think that's the most impressive part of it to me, is that, you know, he's not sacrificing contact or approach to get to that power. He's getting to it really consistently. He's pretty exciting. I have one on here where I took a little bit of a shot in Bryce Matthews, because the contact is bad. There's a lot of swing and miss in Bryce Matthews' game. He's twitchy. There's speed. There's power. He gets on base at a high click, and the quality of contact and the ability to consistently elevate or excellent. 416 X Wobicon, a 60% fly ball plus line drive rate. Dylan, what are your thoughts on Bryce Matthews?
I like Bryce Matthews a lot. I've written about him before. He's kind of the Astros archetype. They want high quality of contact, and they're willing to take the hit on contact. And that makes sense, because if you look at, if you take like sort of standard deviations of contact and standard deviations of 90th percentile exit velocity, 90th percentile exit velocity is like three times more important than contact for future WRC plus. The thing that I like about Matthews is, yes, he has the huge exit velocities and his contacts is slightly below average, but like you said, he doesn't chase. His chase rate this year is 16%. The chase rate last year is 15%. So he's a good idea of the strike zone. He's going to get on base. His on base percentages are going to be good. And then when he gets a hold of it, he's going to crush it. And he's athletic, so he's going to steal 20 bases as well. So he's a great fantasy prospect. Definitely not as highly regarded as he should be, I think. Houston's very good at unlocking these types of guys, both sides of the ball. And I think Bryce Matthews is just another name that's going to be on that list.
Yeah, I do think that, like, you know, we would be remiss to not say that the contact isn't scary. It definitely is. He swings and misses quite a bit. So there is some concern there. You know, there's a couple other names to bring up, but you know what? I want to bring up, last name we'll bring up here, Demetrio Crisantes, infielder with the Diamondbacks. He's in the midst of a 57-game on-base streak rolling to next season, just nine games away from doing what Mookie Betts did in 2013-2014, and 14 off from Kevin Millar and Kevin Youkilis's 71-game stretches. And I think there's maybe one person that's above that. So it's one of the longest on base streaks in the history of the minor leagues. I think that it, especially when you're in the mix with a bunch of really good major leaguers and your archetype of player is much more in the Mookie Betts role than it is the Kevin Millar and Kevin Youkilis role. How excited should we be about Crisantes heading into the offseason, Dylan? What do you think?
I think quite excited. He, I mean, you've targeted him here in your article, but like he's been flashing red on the RoboScout spreadsheet all year.
Just yeah.
Solid swing decisions, solid contact, solid exit velocities, just kind of solid across the board. Got a little bit of speed as well. Just a really exciting young player. I know Josh Norris likes him a lot. Like, he seems to talk about him a lot. So that's always a good endorsement.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the last one that I'm going to bring up here. Go and check out the article. There's a bunch of other names, including one really, really deep sleeper that I think is probably not rostered in outside of the deepest leagues, but is definitely a really interesting player. So I'm going to ask you guys to go to the site, check that out, read our work. We'll have even more stuff coming out as we're sort of wrapping up the year here. We're going to have a lot of our, you know, bigger articles, the Statcast rankings for pitching and hitting will come out sometime in the next couple of months again. Going to do some looks at, you know, picks from this year's draft that could reach the majors in 2025. Guys that have added the most exit velocity, pitchers who've added the most fastball velocity, sort of, you know, take a different, more analytical look at some of the breakouts this season across the minor league baseball. But thanks again for tuning in out there. Thanks for supporting the website and all of the work that we do here at Baseball America. For Jeff, for Dylan, this has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.